Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to a special online event today called Goddesses in Every Woman After 50. Discover your new archetypes at this stage of life and liberate your authentic self. My name is Stephen Dynan. I'm the founder and CEO of The Shift Network, and I'm thrilled to be hosting today, partially because the response has been incredible. We have over 20,000 people signed up for today's call, and we get to be in dialogue with a real hero, a heroine to so many of us. Her name is Jean Shinoda Boland. She's a feminine psychology pioneer. Teachings invite seekers to embrace playing a leading role in the unfolding of your life stories, but through feminist insights with classical myths and Jungian archetypal psychology. She has authored many books, including Goddesses in Every Woman, and it's really a pleasure and honor to be doing this program today, right after the historic Women's March that both in D.C. and around the world really reflects an activation of the feminine that is rising up in our times. And Jean is going to reflect on today about what does that mean for all of us as we move forward to create a better world. So thank you so much, Jean, for your work and for joining us here today.
It's a real pleasure. It's also to do this after the march. I mean, I was in D.C. on Saturday, sort of in and out of Washington, D.C., and the march was an experience of remembering our own history, feeling how wonderful it is when there were women of all ages, women who were carrying babies, there were young children, there were young men, old men, older men, but mostly there was this wonderful sense of we are part of something that is motivated by love and by a sense of bringing the feminine, which is really needed at this time. And I just had a sense, it's hard to describe. One of the things is that those of us who are present, the adjectives to describe it when it was an inner profound experience at one level and it was this outer event on the other. And what I hope to do in my course is to have the remembrance of the kinds of things in which we were felt called to do something and how it turned out. Because every woman and man who went to a march somewhere, but especially those that were called to go to Washington, we were answering something inside of ourselves that is a kind of true compass in us. And to be reminded of that is a gift.
Well, I think it's no accident that the idea for the Women's March came from a grandmother in Hawaii who had just had the initial idea, and 10,000 people jumped on board. And I heard from so many people that they went with their mothers and their daughters, and it became like this intergenerational rising up as well. Versus some marches and protests tend to be very very youth centered or very kind of the angry youth, but this was really an intergenerational coming together. It was very beautiful. So, before we go further,
but it was nice. It was
nice.
Man said, I've been in mobs before, but never one that was so nice. Meaning considerate.
That's a great point. Well, you mentioned Jean. I want to just draw attention. Jean is launching a whole new program called Empowering the Goddesses Within You After 50. We're very excited. This is a brand new program at Shift, and we'll share more about it towards the end of today. But maybe I think this is a good moment to focus in, first of all, Jean, on what is it about this new rising up of the feminine that you think is important for us to understand in terms of the psychology of it, and what does it reflect about this sort of the next wave of the women's movement, if you will?
Well, for one thing, we have, for the first time, women over 50 who were given a different world thanks to the women's movement in the 1970s. So every woman who is over 50 has been affected by the women's movement, and it means that we've had more opportunities, more sense of our own capacities, more experiences in consciousness-raising groups or circles with the Sacred Center. And we have the option when we are 50 I mean, I used to say that 50 was what 35 used to be. So that by the time you're 70 or even 80, as I am, you have this sense of more time to come. I certainly actually do have that sense. And what are you going to do with who you are now? And the women who are in the third phase of life, which is at one level physiologically postmenopausal, is the kind of call to be a juicy crone, someone who mm-hmm. is in that third phase, in which we reflect the ancient great goddess in or the phases of the moon, and the sense of the maiden, the young woman, the mature woman, and the wise woman, and becoming a wise woman crone after 50 means, for one thing, that you have more time and wisdom and to do what is authentically true for you. Up to that point, there are demands of family, work, whatever. You may be just too busy, really, to start to reflect on what your life is all about and what you want to do with what's left of it. And that's one of the things that happens when you get older, is you have a sense of, whoa, time passes really swiftly. And so I have often thought myself and put it out, the quote from Mary Oliver from her poem A Summer Day, in which she says, "Doesn't everything die at last? And too soon. Tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" Now, precious is so obviously, you know what precious means. But I think about wild as what you came in with, the archetypal level, the parts of the talents, the abilities, the inherent you-ness that is like a virgin forest, hasn't been cut down, still exists somewhere in your psyche, the energies that were present when you were 6 and were 9 and 16 are still there. And if it's archetypal energy that really is who you are, then this is a time when it can come out. You know, if you had an innate musical ability, and nobody ever allowed you to learn about music, when you were introduced to it as an adult later, you'd have a sense of being called to know more about this, because some part deeply in you has wanted to be connected with that level of creativity in you that was natural. So this is the sense of these years, that when you have done your responsible, you know, you've done as best you can or not. That's the other thing. And here we are, and we're looking ahead at, I mean, if you're 50, you may have 3, even 4 more decades. You will have as many years of adulthood as preceded, for sure, unless you had the unfortunateness of coming up against a life-threatening illness that got you. And all of us who have survived have known good friends who didn't make it. They're not with us in body. They may be, they actually often are with us in spirit. But we learned somewhere along the line about how it is that we are privileged to be still here. And if we are still here, what are we going to do with this precious time?
Well, it's inspiring. I mean, part of what I'm hearing in what you're sharing is it's like this reframe that the third act can be the best act, is that there's a way in which you've got the time and the wisdom, you've fulfilled enough of your worldly responsibilities that you can really be self-actualizing and fully self-expressed in a whole new level.
I believe that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the third act is like, the, you know, when you see a theater performance, the third act is when it comes together. When whatever happened in the first two acts leaves you sort of in suspension about how is this going to turn out. Third act, you you bring the themes from the first and the second act into the third act.
Mm-hmm.
And often for women, it's picking up what you left behind in the first act, because the second act just sort of occupied you so much with what you had to do that was right in front of you, that only in the third act can you return to what it is you innately love to do or be or played at back when.
Mm-hmm. And so how do the archetypes work into this? So I think it's a fascinating idea that different archetypes tend to activate in different parts of your life. And so how is it that the archetypes help to fuel this third act from being to become the most potent one?
Well, there are archetypes that are, well, what they do is they mediate all the rest of you. It's like in the third act, it's what's really fascinating in mythology. In patriarchal mythology, isn't it strange that the goddesses, the divinities, or the mythologies about wisdom, almost invariably, and certainly in Greek mythology, the goddesses of wisdom are, I mean, they're goddesses of wisdom. They're not gods of wisdom. And why is it that older women have gained a certain wisdom from having lived this long? Partly it has had to do with having made heart commitments and learned through experience. Basically, the wisdom that comes through experience is what you bring into this third phase of your life. And it's a wisdom that then mediates and moderates inherent kind of impulsive other aspects of yourself. You learn to strategize. You learn to do a lot of different things that make you actually more effective and less possessed by some upwelling of feeling that would just have you in the moment be so impulsive or so withdrawn or whatever it is that you might defensively have done. Now the possibility is you have a moment of choice about how are you going to react to this now. And the archetypes are these innate patterns that it helps us to have names for what are basic patterns that we share so that we recognize them when they come up in us. It also means that they come from within. Now, I've used the metaphor in Goddesses and Every Woman about binocular vision. How is it that we see depth? Well, we have two eyes. We look at something from two different angles. They merge, and we have depth perception. This is the same thing with we are acted upon by the archetypes in us that are inherent. There are our natural patterns. And then we have our family, religion, and culture acting on us. So we're being acted on or influenced by the archetypes in us and the culture outside of us. And when we become conscious about how we are shaped by both, we start to be able to be discerning and to make some choices about, all right, which way will I go now? And it is thanks to feminism that women have learned how culture has projected so much on women and have disallowed certain aspects or archetypal energies in us and have insisted that we live out projections and patterns that the culture likes. So that knowledge gives us a level of freedom of choice, which is really what life is a lot about. What will you do now? How will you react? And the most famous goddess of wisdom is Hecate, the goddess of the crossroads. And she was the goddess that you, when you got to the fork in the road, you had to decide which direction will you take now that you're here. And so I'm thinking that as you reach the third phase of your life, you really are at the crossroads coming into the presence of the wise woman Hecate. And now the decisions are often internal decisions. In that transition zone from young woman to mature woman, the choices are much more obvious. Everybody can see Will you go to college? Will you get married? Will you move? Will you divorce? Whatever it is that you do is so visible. But in this transition into the third phase, it's so inner. You're at the crossroads. Are you going to become bitter? Are you going to become compassionate? Are you going to gain some wisdom? Are you going to have gratitude? Or are you going to whine? I happen to write another book. This one is based on goddesses and older women, I realize. But I wrote Crones Don't Whine, which doesn't talk about archetypes, but talks about the essence of what it is to become a wise woman. And one of it, the first thing is crones don't whine. Because you cannot grow into the phase of life in which you're a wise woman if you're sitting and you're comparing yourself for, oh, I didn't have the perfect marriage. Oh, I didn't have the perfect kids. Oh, the job didn't come through. And you sit at the gateway between the second act and the third act, and you're whining about how it didn't turn out. And you can't step through that liminal, that doorway into the wisdom years unless you can really look at your life and grieve for what didn't work out and have gratitude for what it is that you are grateful for. And if you are, say, 50 years old, and you haven't looked around and realized, especially if you're an American woman or a woman in the first world, industrial world, and you've had a chance for education and for travel, and you've had reproductive choice, and you've been aware that other women in this world do not have these choices or rights. And at this point, to have gratitude, to not whine about what didn't happen, to not become bitter or cynical, but to be grateful and then feeling responsible. I think that there was a phrase that impressed me way back when, to whom much is given, much is expected. And I think that there's a certain real wisdom in appreciation that if you have been gifted, privileged, if your mind is still working, if your health is good enough, whatever it is, you have a lot to be thankful for, and what are you going to do to give back? And this is what motivates so much giving back energy in wise women, crone-aged, third-act women.
It's beautiful, and I think that also leads naturally into, you were going to talk about goddesses of compassion and how that's really the archetypes that start to activate in this third act as well.
You know, the Greeks didn't, which means the model of Mount Olympus with Zeus on the top, the whole model of power over, which we certainly are getting more and more aware of, that the Greeks did not have a goddess of compassion. Aphrodite is the goddess of love and goddess of beauty. But that's Eros. That is erotic love. That is sensual love. What about compassion? Compassion is a deeper, wider, broader capacity to love. It's a heart-oriented capacity to have mercy. And so in the Eastern religions, there are bodhisattvas or goddesses of compassion, Kuan Yin in China, Kanan in Japan, but throughout all of Southeast Asia and Asia, there are goddesses of compassion. And one thing about the goddess of compassion is that you don't have to work to deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask for it. And the only figure we have two figures in the United States. One is Lady Liberty, which is usually referred to as the Statue of Liberty, as if to say it is not feminine exactly. But it is really viewed from the beginning, there's always been a kind of underlying feeling that it is Lady Liberty. And Emma Lazarus' words, give me your tired, your poor. Your teeming masses yearning to breathe free, I lift my torch beside the golden door. I mean, that is what, I mean, it's awesome. I remember being on a cruise boat sailing into New York Harbor and going by it and looking up at it, and I was moved. There's something about that statue and what she means. And this is a time when we really need to bring her back into conscious action,
mm-hmm.
because this business about we're not going to accept immigrants, we're going to put a wall up, we're going to we are going to shut our door. Essentially, that's mm-hmm. what the current administration is saying. We are shutting the door down. Well, I think about when I was in Washington was hearing about how a beautiful Muslim temple was being harassed by a guy and his buddies with a bullhorn and saying nasty things about Muslims. And I have a friend who drove by and then returned by and told me about the series of things that people did. It didn't work until the third person who tried to get them to stop, not with hostility, but with a kind of feminine way of being softer about things. You know, mobs are often what they are because they are assertive, hostile, aggressive, angry, and they, you know, cross. They're inviting trouble from the police. Well, in this case, what happened is some people took a piece of poster paper and wrote spontaneously on it on the sidewalk and held it up, and it said, "Honk if you love Muslims." And all these cars that went by started honking. And it made the guy with the bullhorn go away. And Gloria Steinem at the March in Washington reminded people that if the current administration starts to register Muslims, then we should all register as Muslims. It's a different way of encountering. The feminine encounters what's wrong in a different way than the masculine does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why both are needed. And so I've really felt that the Dalai Lama was right when he said it's up to Western women if we're going to have peace.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are the privileged ones. By Western women, I mean all of the women in the world who have a sense of empowerment and a sense of compassion and a sense of that they have something to do with what happens in their world. Every woman who says, "The violence against women stops with, you're not going to do that to me or to my neighbor or to that kid or whatever," is doing something that adds up. I mean, this march was amazing. When you touch a nerve and it spreads through the internet, but it could have spread by word of mouth for that matter. But it didn't, because right now we had such a small window of time to get it all out there, and I think, I don't know who started the pink pussy caps, but let me tell you, that was a genius. In fact, this morning I put on my pink pussy cat hat because I thought that I should wear it while we're talking, but it actually is too warm. It was a very thick one. It was knitted by an indigenous woman in Alaska who couldn't come to Washington, but several of her friends were coming from Alaska to Washington, and she and a group just knitted this whole batch for them to wear and to give away, and so I got one. And when I was in the, it was taking a connection flight from Denver to Dulles in Washington, I got on the plane and there were a lot of women wearing these pink hats. I was delighted to see them. It makes you smile. And at a certain point, I kind of initiated something for the stewardess to go to her microphone, and she commented upon the pink hats and for them to stand up. But she neglected the others of us who were sitting there without wearing pink hats, so that after all of that happened, I stood up and said, everyone who's going to Washington who isn't wearing a pink hat, stand up and wave your hands. And, you know, that particular plane must have been close to two-thirds women going to Washington for the march, because it was really, I mean, we landed at 6:02 on Friday before the Saturday march began in the morning. So, I mean, this is pretty last minute, all of us. But to know that you have that you're part of something that has purpose and humor, and this is one of the other goddesses that never comes up in Greek mythology to speak of, because she got so minimized, but there actually is a goddess of mirth and healing. I classified her as a goddess of healing laughter, healing humor. That when you can smile and laugh together, it heals something. And the capacity for older women, younger women get kind of sensitive. Should I laugh at the joke? Should I not laugh at the joke? You know, the sort of laugh like a lady, whatever it is. Well, by the time you are an older woman, you can have a belly laugh that is really raucous, especially if you are with other older women. And you can laugh at things that have to do with what our bodies are doing now, for goodness sakes, you know. But it's the kind of thing that is authentic, and a belly laugh is a whole body experience. It is not just you know, making nice and laughing at somebody's joke to support him, which is sort of what women tend to do, whether you think it funny or not, because then there's a moment of truth, actually. You either laugh along when it's a hostile, put-down joke, or you think about saying something, or you do say something. I mean, there are these moments of choice in everyday life, which stepping up to the plate and choosing what you will do is something that is part of what I really want to help women to realize, that you are the protagonist in your own life story, and you are about to be the protagonist in the third act. And how are you going to be now? Are you going to hold back? Are you going to speak up? And this is where some of the not only goddesses of compassion, but the goddesses of wisdom that have to do with having the wisdom to know that sometimes this is not the right time. Because you, by the time you are older, you also realize a certain level of vulnerability. And so a number of activists, and younger women activists who are in the model of Artemis, the goddess of the hunt, goddess of the moon. I mean, she is really the archetype of the women's movement. She can become so outraged and act impulsively at times that it's not a wise thing just to unleash your inner Artemis when it's really not a good thing when you have other people to consider, when you have how you are going to support yourself to think about. What you learn as you grow older is what fights you are going to take on if you're an Artemis. Because there is a goddess of transformative wrath that I will be talking about that sometimes seems to arise in those women who have been codependents or have been women who have been too compassionate. And it hasn't been a wise compassion, but it has lent itself to not valuing yourself, but giving over to somebody else so much of who you are. And then at a certain point, often if you have been the archetype of the mother or the archetype of Persephone, the daughter, it's only maybe in the third act that you get in touch with a anger in yourself that is empowering of you in a positive way. that because you are actually outraged at what you see going on and outraged at how you have treated yourself badly. And in their midst, they got carried away by it. So if you have also these other archetypes of moderation and wisdom, then you have the energy finally. But you also have a way of reacting that is wise. So wisdom and wrath and humor and being together with other women, which was part of the women's experience that we all had. And it wasn't exclusionary. You know, we had Black Lives Matter. We had young guys and older men. We had it, but there was a definite sense of operating not from patriarchal power over and aggressive hostility, but with a real sense of purpose and values, but a way of expressing it that was different.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I love what you said about the traditional archetype of classic women's movement was more Artemis, but that it actually the Women's March integrates more of this, the kind of elder archetypes here, like that you're talking about with the goddesses of compassion and healing laughter with the kind of mischievous little pink hats and the pussy the yes. pussy references, which are just delightful. We were at the one in San Francisco, and it was super fun and funny. And also the appropriate wrathfulness at times too, which in a way you need the compassion and the ground of healing laughter for the wrathful not to just be like kind of stuck anger. It needs to be come out in a really kind of clean and fierce way when just at the right moment, right?
Absolutely. it really and you actually can have all of those kinds of feelings. And not be taken, and have them in some kind of balance. I mean, one of the things about being a Jungian analyst is having a real appreciation for the tension of opposites, and how the observer, choice maker we are caught, not caught, but we are consciously holding two poles between us, in us. So there can be wrath on one hand and compassion on the other. And out of that, we choose how we are going to respond. And again, that's arriving at the moments of choice and sitting with Hecate and deciding, oh, what now? I mean, I think this is something all of us need to sometimes hear resonating in ourselves, to stop long enough to wonder and ask ourselves, what now? And one of the things that I've learned along the way is that you sometimes think the momentum is really going to carry your cause and your values and, you know, your vision, and now it's really going to go straight on and it's going to work. And then it doesn't. Now what? Well, I have learned through getting older and wiser that the path is not straight, and that the best path for me really is to appreciate the labyrinth and to walk and to appreciate the Chartres labyrinth is to know that there are U-turns in the path, that in fact in the Chartres labyrinth there are 28 U-turns. So if you're an activist, you're going to run into a lot of what feels like defeats, setbacks, discouragements. But if you can realize that these are just U-turns, if you stick to the path, if your heart is involved in the choices that you are making, which is this one path that is your one life, it's your soul journey, there will be losses, there will be defeats. What now? You know, quit, give up, get bitter, or not. So it's not just don't whine. It's as the Obama saying in the White House was, don't get cynical. because then as you travel your journey, you become not one with the path that you were on before, but you become stuck in a place that soul and heart and health often become in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there's so much of what you're sharing, and I'd love to focus a little on just how do we activate these different archetypes. So I feel like you've done a great job of pointing out and helping us notice the presence of them, but how do you actually work with them in a conscious way? So you have the Hecate and the wisdom that she represents, and the Lady Liberty and the Goddess of Compassion, and Baobo and Healing Laughter, you know, all these different goddesses. So how do you begin to really bridge these in so that they're infusing and empowering us in different ways?
I would love it if we all had a circle of support for ourselves, men and women. But especially with the people that I expect are interested in this course, I think there will be a mix of mostly women, and probably given the title, mostly women from 50 on, and men who are with women with a strong feminine side, or men who are therapists who work with women. So my thought and knowledge is that what really then is useful is to get into a circle in which you have a circle of support for your life. It happens to be what made the women's movement of the 70s what it became. They called them consciousness-raising groups, but they were essentially support circles, like we've learned AA is a... You know, we know AA is a support circle. I wrote the book, The Million Circle, with the image being with Hestia, goddess of the hearth, the invisible fire at the center of the round hearth that represents the larger self or the spirit or the goddess or all that is, the kind of thing that we call upon that's sacred in us and in the universe that we inhabit, to support us in our life. And if you are in a circle that stays together over years, one of the things that happens is that we become role models for each other, we have each other's back, and it's a place where you can incubate your dreams and you can learn stuff that you wouldn't have learned otherwise. I mean, the consciousness-raising groups did it as well. I mean, they didn't have a spiritual center like the Mayan Circle model would have, but it had a value system at its center. And women in the circle told the truth of their own lives and supported each other to do whatever it was that they were moved to do, now that they knew that there was something called patriarchy and knew that they were oppressed and knew that other women besides themselves were harassed and all the kinds of things that raised their consciousness and made them feel akin to other women. And then that energy went forth. Well, now that, and I saw that energy there were a lot of college-age young women in Washington. And there were a lot of women who were older, and many had actually marched before for the Vietnam War, against the Vietnam War, rather, and things like that. And so this group of people cross-generationally, what I'm hoping is that now that we are back from the march, that the women who went will get together with each other and include perhaps some of the men that went with them to talk about what happened to them through stepping up and being part of something bigger than themselves. Because I think just as the consciousness-raising group was the unit that changed it for us, circles with a spiritual center is the unit that could truly change the world. And so the bigger vision for me is ending patriarchy by bringing in a balanced, egalitarian world in which you know, like the yin yang symbol, that the masculine and the feminine are in balance in individuals and in culture. And the best way to live it out actually is in a circle where you tell the truth, where you can get angry, where you can cry, where you can ask for prayers. And what we know from a spiritual sense that it seems that the spiritual world, by however you call it, responds to requests and leaves you kind of alone sometimes when you ignore it. But it's a channel, really, of energy that you can feel supported by. And when you are in a small group and you are focused on something for each other and all, it's a different way of having your back. I mean, it's a spiritual way as well as the people in it. And Angelus Arian had her four principles, which was show up, pay attention, speak your truth, and don't be attached to outcome. Now, this is perfect if you are speaking truth to power, which is one of the major things that women did need to do and did with the women's movement and need to do now. But when it comes to caring about people, we cannot be unattached. So then it becomes show up, pay attention, speak your truth with wisdom and compassion and all the things that come with getting older and wiser. And then pray for best outcome, because we don't always know. We think we know how things ought to turn out. But remember these U-turns in the labyrinth. We thought, you know, like my major activism since 2002 was to envision a fifth UN World Conference on Women, or 5WCW, because I could envision what happened in Beijing in 1995. There hasn't been a women's conference since then. And this is when Hillary Clinton, as Mrs. Clinton, the wife of the president, said, women's rights are human rights, human rights are wisdom, are human rights are women's rights, which I heard echoed again on Saturday. And the kinds of things that came out of that conference is that women felt the energy of being together in this. And there was a wonderful film that documented one group. So it was called The Train to Beijing. And it was a train that went from Europe all the way to Beijing. And all along the way, women joined the train and talked with each other and planned what they would do. And once they got there, women again were together. And like women's friendships, there was a trusting of we have shared values. We now know, we learn from each other, role modeling each other, and whatever. So I thought, well, what a global women's movement needs right now after the march is to go from the march into working towards a fifth Women's World Conference. And I'm not sure how it's to come about. I really have out there. I've been trying. I've been feeling a bit like I have felt like a voice crying in the wilderness. After I thought it was going to happen when the president of the General Assembly and Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General in 2002, came out and said it's time we had one. There's a need for it. There are more emerging issues since Beijing, and it didn't. Their appeal to the General Assembly didn't work. So it sort of was dropped. Well, I've kept persevering because I believe in this vision, but I'm wondering how it might spread through the internet, how people might lobby their countries to support such a thing. There's a nucleus of countries whose ambassadors at the UN are talking now about reintroducing this. So if the time is right, if the women who marched and the men who supported them would come out for this now, then my vision is 5WCW in 2020, which would be 25 years after Beijing. and a perfect time.
May
really.
It be so.
And may it really be so. And so this is a, yes, I'm putting out my own pitch for this, but this is what we all need to be doing. We all must have our own whatever it is that we want called to do. And see, what I think about every person who went to a march is most of us felt that it was something we were called to do. And I just want people to respond affirmatively when from inside out, from inside they hear something that's going on outside. We hear about things all the time, but something inside says, I want to do that.
Well, there's so much that we could go into, and I want to turn some attention onto your upcoming program directly, and really emphasize that so many of the archetypes you've talked about and the larger trends in our culture, I personally, as a somewhat younger man, I'm 47, but I really see that the women over 50 are the carriers of the deeper change that we want to see in the world. It's the elder feminine that is going to help heal and unite and really bring our world together. And so the empowerment of these archetypes and the empowerment of being in circle and creating larger movements for change and doing so in a way that really is new. It's not about just anger at the system. It's about the playfulness. It's about the healing laughter. It's about the pussy hats. It's about all of that that makes it more disarming and more compassionate and more unifying is really what can heal the world. But it begins with this deep embrace of a new phase and an activation of another level of beingness and self-expression and authenticity. And I think you're just offering such a beautiful program for how to do that. So I want to draw people's attention to the program directly now. Again, it's called Goddesses in Every Woman After 50, Discovering Your New Archetypes at This Stage of Life and Liberate Your Authentic Self. And you can find that at Goddesses in You course, Goddesses in You, Y-O-U, course, and we're going to be working with 7 different feminine archetypes. And maybe as you share a little bit about the program, you can give a bit of a sneak preview of how working with each of these archetypes results in the activation or embodiment of new qualities that people are going to be able to have. So it's a beautiful new program, 7-week program, 7 major archetypes, and let's go from there.
Well, there are the goddesses of wisdom. All of them are kind of dimly known because they are not forceful, in-your-face kinds of goddess archetypes. There's a Metis, the first goddess of wisdom prior to Greek mythology. Turns out she was the goddess of wisdom, the mother of Athena. And when she comes into you in your third phase, it's the practical and intellectual wisdom that you now have because you become seasoned. Now, will you lead from that? There is the goddess of mystical and spiritual wisdom. And this is Sophia, again, not a Greek goddess, but her name is Greek for the word wisdom. And she's in the Bible, but in the English Bible, she's been reduced to the word wisdom, lowercase. But as the archetype of mystical and spiritual wisdom, this grows out of having had a religious or spiritual part of yourself, that now in the third phase, you have more clarity and more ability to kind of define for yourself rather than have somebody tell you what you should believe. And then there's Hecate, who is the most prominent one. And she was the one who accompanied Persephone when Persephone emerged from her abduction and came back into the world. And Hecate, in this story of the abduction of Persephone, is an invisible presence in that she was supposedly preceded and followed her, which you can't do, of course, if you're embodied. But when you have a myth that is about overcoming death, overcoming descent into the underworld, resurrection, then it's not surprising that it's the same story as the one that we are familiar with, only it's a mother, daughter, and wise woman spirit that gives us the same message as a Christian message, that this world we're in is not the only world, that there is a whole other invisible spiritual world that we can be attuned to. And then Hecate, actually, besides being prominent in the story of Persephone and Demeter, she is mystically involved psychically. She's the medium. She is the psychic. She is the intuitive one. She can see past, present, future. She is, her time is twilight. She travels between the underworld and the upper world. She has been made into a witch. She has been feared by patriarchy. She's been burnt at the stake, or burnt at the stake in whom this archetype was active. And that's also why women hesitate to reveal what they intuitively know. Because we know somewhere in us that once upon a time we were burnt at the stake for being who we are. And then Hestia, who is the only goddess archetype that I put in both goddesses and every woman and goddesses and older women, and she is also invisible, she's not personified. She's a fire at the center of a round hearth. It was Hestia that made a house a home, a building a temple. And then the goddess of healing laughter, which is Uzumi, a major story in Japanese mythology, and Babo, who got reduced to being a maidservant in the story of Demeter and Persephone. And she is mirth, she is movement, she is also sensual in that she dances, she's in her body. And she can laugh about what's happening with her body, in her mm-hmm. body. And the goddess of compassion, Kuan Yin, Lady Liberty, Kanan, and also the Virgin Mary. There's a sense of how Mary personifies compassion and understanding. You know, you just have to remember the image of Michelangelo's Pietà. Here is a mother who's lost a child. And given the drive-by shootings in bad parts of town, given the wars that are going on all over, given soldiers that go off to war and the predators that go after girls, the sense that there's a feminine that knows suffering and has survived suffering. I mean, this is a strength in older women. By the time you are over 50, there are people and stories. There's grief. There's depths. And out of that depth can come either cynicism or compassion. And the goddess of transformative wrath, which, Kali is, it's what's amazing is this an identical script, story, for Sekhmet, the lioness-headed goddess of ancient Egypt, and Kali, who came out of Durga's head while Durga was riding a lion. And essentially, what's fascinating to me in their stories is that both goddesses were called out to come up out of wherever they came up from, by either the gods or the men in power, because evil was threatening the world and only a goddess could protect and save the world. So here's this mythology that says when we're up against real evil, when the men in charge say we cannot vanquish this evil, they called on the goddess to confront it. So those are the goddesses that I will be talking about. But I also will be saying something about how the goddesses that we do know from goddesses and every woman, the Greek goddesses, how these other goddesses, older goddesses, help balance what could be the, what is maybe the shadow side of some of the goddesses that are more familiar.
Mm. Well, it's going to be an amazing program. We know people, we had, I think, 400 or 500 people participate in your program last year and just raved about it, and we know this is going to be particularly juicy for those who are in this very specific phase, which has so much creative potential and so much capacity to serve not only community and family, but really the larger world. And so I think this is going to unleash so much creative, juicy, fun energy that is ultimately evolving our culture. So I'll say a few words about some there. If you look on the page at goddessesinyoucourse.com, you can see there's 7 modules, and Jean actually goes into menopause as a powerful initiation, and circle work, and this act 3, and being a juicy crone, and in addition to all the different archetypes that you're working with. So you're getting some good overview teachings on things, as well as a circle of support, as Jean was talking about. There's a Facebook community that gets very active. There's recordings and PDF transcripts of every session. You can meet in small group practice sessions afterwards, which allow you to kind of express yourself and be mutually empowered and really work with the different archetypes. So really put this into practice, and there's a real power that's unleashed when people are coming together across the whole world. Really, there'll probably be 30 or 40 countries represented in this course, if history is any guide. So it's going to be a great journey. There's also some beautiful bonuses that Jean has offered. There's an audio teaching on imagination, mother of all possibilities. And Jean, you want to say anything about that?
That's true. It is the mother of all possibilities. You have to imagine it. You have to imagine that, say, before you can do something, you have to imagine yourself being able to do it. And this especially applies to people who have been told that they have a diagnosis with a really bad statistics. You have to imagine that maybe the statistics aren't really good, but somebody survives it, and why can't it be you? If you can imagine that you could be the survivor, then you put yourself into what you need to do in order to survive, and lo and behold, it's likely quite possible. And and that's at one end of the spectrum of possibilities. The other is that you see someone who's a role model, and you're the first person who has ever gone on for a higher degree, or the first person to go on to college. You remember that from being... We all know people that are the first in their family to do this. And often it did take affirmative action, the women's movement, that created the possibility. And if you look across and see someone, this is what we did for each other in the women's movement. It was like, if she could do that, then I could do what I want to do and be as well. So it's a powerful force, imagination.
Mm. Well, that's a great bonus, and it's not the only one. So there's others. There's a video with Jean and Roger Walsh from Global Spirit called The Call of Wisdom. It's also Jean's keynote address from the 3rd International Women's Peace Conference, so that's helping seed her vision for a 5th. This is Heeding the Urgent Message from Mother. And we also have one bonus, which is just available today, and it's a big one, too. It's actually a 5-hour audio workshop from Jean called Women's Spirit, The Fire Within. And we do this as a little way to encourage you to go to the page right away at goddessesinyoucourse.com and to really give everything a read through and tune in. And if you're getting that yes, that you want to activate these new archetypes and be in this amazing community of women, then you've got an extra incentive to do so today. So, Jean, you want to share a little bit about that audio workshop, Women's Spirit, The Fire Within?
I just want to say that it was a real workshop. It was done at in Chicago, and I'm thinking that with anything, I'm thinking that there could be something like a synchronistic happening, that one of the ways of looking at taking a course from anybody is that something was meant for you. And the person who's teaching it has no idea that one phrase or one image is just what you needed to hear. So I can't say about that particular workshop, just that I know that I enjoyed doing it, and I know that that it does carry that kind of mix of spontaneity and imagery and story, which is what I do in my workshops. I'd like to add one thing, though, to the Shift Network and why this is the second course I'm giving. You know, I did the first course, and I was really impressed at how Shift does what it does. The people who couldn't hear this right at the time it was offered, download a copy of it. When I'm giving the course, there are those who can listen to it right live, because it's live. If you can't listen to it live, you could get a recording. If you heard something that was significant, that one or two pieces that somehow told you that this was something I needed to hear, you can read about it in the transcript. The way in which the student of courses that the Shift does is taken care of. The fact that I have a live Q&A makes me really feel great about teaching, because I'm teaching from my home, teaching from my living room, speaking spontaneously, and the questions that come help me to expand whatever it is that I was saying, and it's a real interactive kind of a thing. And then it's the option of being in a small group and an option of being in a Facebook group. The range in which the student is taken care of by the Shift Network is really impressive. And I didn't know that you did this so amazingly well until, you know, I stepped up and did my first course. And that's why I'm doing my second course. It's just like, I like how you do what you do for people, including how you take care of the speaker.
Well, we love working with you, Jean. So we're very excited about this program. I think, Jean, you're just a treasure and such a source of wisdom and inspiration. You just make me smile, too, like the way you talk about life. There's just a playfulness and laughter that's always close to your voice. So we're looking forward to a great program. It starts on February 8th. It's going to run on Wednesdays at 12 Pacific time, although, as Jean mentioned, if you can't make it live, you can always catch up with the recordings. We've kept it very, very accessible. It's just three payments of $109, or you can save about 10% with one payment of $297 when you register. And you get the Women's Spirit, the Fire Within, the audio workshop with Jean when you sign up today, only until midnight. So we know it's going to be an amazing session. We've got 20,000 people who registered for this program, for today's free program, so we know it's going to be a big group of beautiful, excited, dynamic, juicy, potentially juicy crones, or crones in the process of becoming even juicier. So we know it's going to be a great adventure. So you can find all the details at goddessesinyoucourse.com. And Jean, what a pleasure it's been. Thank you for this time and inspiration, really connecting us with the heart of the women's movement. I love the way you could see the archetypes that you're talking about really manifesting and how this new women's movement is arising as a more integrated, full-spectrum kind of feminine approach to shifting our world.
It is indeed, and it can happen. Again, imagination does play a part. When you take part in something and it works, you get really empowered to do more.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Well, thank you, Jean, and thank you all for joining. And let's all go forth and make a better world. And we welcome all you who want to play with this group of goddesses in training and at at goddessesinyoucourse.com. So thank you so much, and look forward to seeing a lot of you in the program. Bye now.